The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Coming up today, guys, 8 p.m. Eastern, my Q&A on Locals, and you can check it out at dinesh.locals.com. We'll be talking in depth about the movie and other matters that people want to talk about. I'm going to reveal today how the Durham investigation is finally locating the head of the snake, and that may very well be Hillary Rodham Clinton. I'm going to continue my takedown of various bogus fact checks on the documentary. I'm also going to ask if the sheriff of Yuma is going to be the first law enforcement official to take necessary action on the mules. And then a little bit more on Dante. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Show.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy, in a time of confusion, division, and lies. We need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
Did Hillary Clinton try to rig the 2016 election? Well, it looks like that may very well be the case. Right before the election, Hillary tweeted this out. This could be the most direct link yet between Donald Trump and Moscow. Computer scientists have uncovered a covert server linking the Trump organization, not the Trump campaign, but the Trump organization, to a Russian-based bank. So this was Hillary essentially attaching an article that claimed that there was this connection between the Trump organization and a Russian bank. Now, as it turns out, there was no such connection. As it turns out, that this connection was concocted and fabricated by who? By a top Democratic attorney, a guy named Sussman. And Sussman is now in the sights of the Durham probe, and in fact, he's undergoing trial, Michael Sussman, for lying to the FBI. Sussman went to the FBI and said, hey, listen, I'm coming to you as a private citizen and I'm giving you information. Turns out he was not a private citizen. He was actually paid operative for the Clinton campaign. So what's becoming really clear here is that the Clinton campaign wanted to put out this story, a false story, and essentially say that Trump is kind of a Russian agent. And so think about that. They're in a campaign. One presidential candidate is accusing another of being a traitor to the country. And it turns out that it wasn't just that Hillary was misled about this. She saw a report. She thought it was authentic. No, the report was cooked up by the Hillary campaign itself. And then what they did, their strategy was pretty simple. Let's take this cooked up, charge, give it to the FBI and get them to investigate. This is what Sussman was doing. He was pushing the idea to his friend, Baker, at the FBI. And sure enough, Baker was like, okay, we'll take a look at it. And then the idea was to leak the fact that the FBI was investigating. See, it's one thing to say the Clinton campaign claims, and people obviously take that with appropriate skepticism. But if the FBI is investigating, then it looks like there's more to it. So what you have here is really a very nefarious kind of snake-like scheme devised by the Hillary campaign and then pushed out through obliging media sources, people like Franklin Foer of Slate magazine, and then pushed out also through to the FBI. And then Hillary herself comes to the scene and goes, oh, whoa, what do we have here? Looky here. And so this is deceptive from start to finish. The latest revelation comes from former Clinton campaign manager. This is Robbie Mook. And he was talking about the Hillary campaign sharing of this false information with the media about the connection between the Trump organization and Russia's Alpha Bank. And Mook says he got this information from Mark Elias, again, top Democrat, another nefarious character who's known for shady operations. And Elias at the time was at the law firm called Perkins Coie. He subsequently, I believe, left. But kind of toward the end of his testimony, the question was asked, well, this idea of releasing this information to the media, who approved it? Who discussed it? Who said, go ahead and do it? And it turns out, Hillary. Hillary approved it. So Mook goes, quote, I discussed it with Hillary as well. I don't remember the substance of the conversation, but the discussion was, hey, we have this. We want to share it with a reporter. And then the government asked Mook, did Clinton approve the dissemination of the data to the media? And Mook goes, she agreed. So this is one sign. It's not the full picture, but one sign that Hillary is the head of the snake. Hillary is the one supervising the operation and directing it. Have you given it to the FBI? Have you released it to the media? Yep, I think you should release it to the media. Then, of course, Hillary moves in and pretends surprise, like, wow, this is really startling information that's coming out, even though it's information that they themselves cooked up. So Democrats are very diabolical in the way that they do these things. This is sort of the kind of operation that you won't get from Republicans. First of all, they can't, even if they thought of it, which is unlikely, they don't have the ability to get the FBI to go along because they haven't corrupted the FBI. They don't have obliging reporters to jump on it and go, the FBI is investigating. Whereas the Democrats have this structure in place. It's a kind of a coordinated operation with liars all along the way. There are liars in the FBI, there are liars in the media, and then there are liars in the Clinton campaign, all headed, of course, by the chief liar, which is Hillary herself. And so I'm frustrated with the kind of very methodical, over-methodical approach by Durham. It's sort of like he's trying to get the Sussman guy on one false statement. You know, at this rate, if he ever gets to Hillary, it's going to be like 2050 by the time he gets there. So I don't have a lot of confidence that this is moving with the kind of clarity and rapidity that it should. But at least what we see is so distasteful and shows that while we're talking now about the 2020 election, there is little doubt that Hillary Clinton and her team tried in their own way, using this bogus Russia collusion, to rig the 2016 election. When Mike Lindell developed his My Slippers, Debbie and I were like, let's get them right away. Mike has taken over 2 years to develop these My Slippers. They're designed to wear indoor or outdoor all day long, made with MyPillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue, and they're also made with quality leather suede. For a limited time, Mike is offering the Slipper Blowout Sale of the Year. Save $90 with promo code Dinesh. Regular price of these slippers, $139.98. Now on sale, $49.98. Debbie and I just love ours. I got the moccasins. Debbie got the slip-ons. So go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Dinesh. Of course, you can call 800-876-0227, 800-876-0227. But either way, make sure to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. Lots of stuff going on, guys, with 2,000 Mules, and I thought I would give you a little survey or update on various things happening. First of all, we had a successful theatrical release this first weekend. I mean, it's very unusual. Normally, you release in the theater first, then you do later DVD, later digital download, even later streaming. This was a very odd release plan, all jumbled, in which we did a very limited theatrical and the virtual premiere, and then we did digital download and streaming, and then now back in the theater. So about 400 theaters, and we took in about $750,000, which is a lot because we're mainly in these smaller independent theaters. And typically when theaters gauge how a movie is doing, they look at what's called the per screen average. How are you doing in one theater per screen? And by that ranking, we were actually number 3 in the country. Think about this. This is a political documentary. A, it's hard enough to get it in a theater. B, it's hard enough to get people to go. C, it's hard enough to compete with major Hollywood films. And yet we're able to do that. So we're going to continue in the theater this next week and weekend. We'll probably be in about the same number of theaters, maybe about 350. And it's great. Mostly independent theaters or some theaters from Cinemark. It's kind of a mix. Now, our DVD, wow, number 1 in the country. And even though a lot of the DVDs are being sold on SalemNow.com, They're also on Amazon. They're going to be going up shortly on Walmart. And here is, I'm looking at Amazon. Our movie hasn't moved from number one, top seller, not in documentaries, not in political films. It's top bestseller, number one in all movies and TV. And we're beating Dune. We're beating No Time to Die. We're beating The Batman. So this is very rare for a documentary to be topping the Amazon charts of all movies and TV. And I'm laughing also because some folks in Dallas sent me a big sign over the Dallas overpass. I believe this is in Collin County. It took 2,000 mules to install one jackass. Now, I know this wasn't original with them. Other people have said it. But it's really funny to see this huge banner of a jackass looking just kind of dumb as can be. And then a bunch of people on top of the overpass just waving American flags and come and take it and Trump. So it's all very cool. Now, this past weekend, I was in Arizona and I did two events. One was a Maricopa County GOP luncheon, a very interesting event, because it had a real mixture of Republicans. It had some, you know, MAGA Trump types, but it also had some establishment types. And I was able to lay out sort of, this is the argument of the film. And I addressed a lot of the leading kind of criticisms of the film. And I showed not only that these criticisms could be answered, but I was kind of giving people ammunition for how they themselves could answer these critiques. And really well received. I mean, just thunderous applause at the end, which really shows me that the movie, this is not just a kind of a MAGA movie that the rest of the Republicans are like, well, what's this all about? Once they see it, they're on board. They're excited and they realize that there's a big problem here that needs to be fixed. It needs to be fixed with Republican vigilance, because the Democrats obviously are not going to be the ones to fix it. They're the beneficiaries of the mules. The next day I did a Turning Point screening of the movie, and this was in Arizona, and huge. I mean, just, I don't even know how many people, 1,500 maybe. And they came with signs, they're all fired up, and we played the film, and then Charlie Kirk and I did a kind of brief Q&A afterward, which was also very good. And what I like is to see the activists basically saying, you know what, Dinesh, you've done it, you've kind of put the message out there, given us what we need, the evidence, the proof. We'll take it from here. We're going to run with this, because a movie doesn't do by itself activism. A movie can be a prelude to activism, just as an apologetics, Christian apologetics, is a prelude to getting you sort of into a Christian community, into a church. But of course, apologetics doesn't do the same thing as what pastors do. So a terrific event. A bunch of congressmen were there. Andy Biggs, Paul Gosar, and others, Schweikert and others. Also Carrie Lake, the leading candidate for governor, was there. And she got a thunderous ovation. And it's hilarious to see the way she hits back on these issues. Next weekend, I'll be in Atlanta. Notice that this is kind of a swing state tour I'm doing with Turning Point. We did our event in Milwaukee. Then, of course, last weekend, Phoenix, and now Atlanta. I'm not sure if we'll be doing Michigan and or Pennsylvania, but we're certainly hitting three of the five kind of battleground states. And so this event coming up, Marjorie Taylor Greene will be there, Jake Evans will be there, and I predict we'll have a huge crowd once again. We've also been doing some really cool media. And a very interesting in-depth Q&A with Megyn Kelly, 90 minutes. And Megyn Kelly, of course, being an attorney, is able to probe these issues really well. And, you know, she was a friendly but also skeptical interlocutor. And so if you haven't seen that, it's both in audio and video. I've put it out on Twitter, the link to the Apple podcast, but also the video links at YouTube. And I think it's a caliber of discussion that's pretty rare. Normally, you get this kind of sarcastic left-wing jibes that are just unsupported by anything, not only that is valid evidence, but even probable. But with Megyn Kelly, it was more like, how do we know this? And can we be sure of that? And what do we know as opposed to what we suspect? So I kind of felt like I was under a kind of friendly cross-examination, and I think the result of it makes it a very interesting conversation. So check it out if you are able to. Who likes to eat 6 servings of fruits and vegetables every single day? I mean, who can realistically do that? Well, Balance of Nature provides that, and their products are 100% natural, vine-ripened, whole food, and third-party tested. This is real science, real food, real nutrition. Debbie and I take 10 daily servings of the fruits and veggies, take a look, all in 6 small capsules. They're no trouble swallowing, always fresh, nothing artificial, they smell great. And Debbie also swears by this, the fiber and spice that keeps her regular. Invest in your health, invest in your life, join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself for years to come. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code BALANCE. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751, or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code BALANCE. Evidently, the subject of 2,000 mules was addressed by Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski on Morning Joe. Now, the way this came about is that a reporter named Elise Jordan was in Georgia, and she was doing a kind of a focus group of Republican voters. And the subject of 2,000 mules came up, and these guys were pretty enthusiastic. But what I want to focus on here is the reaction from Scarborough, because it really is revealing of the kind of bubble that these people live in. They, in a sense, presume the truth of their point of view. They don't engage with opposing ideas. They're incapable of it. They're intellectually completely shut down. And so they think that by using terms like grift and conspiracy theory, they have sort of made a point. Of course, conspiracies do exist. By the way, I don't claim in 2,000 Mules that we're dealing with, quote, a conspiracy. I claim that we're dealing with a coordinated operation in which one guy, Zuckerberg, puts up the drop boxes. Another guy, Mark Elias, Stacey Abrams, fight to weaken the signature requirements. The mules are deployed by the nonprofits. So this doesn't necessarily have to be a single conspiracy directed by kind of a Don Corleone. The Democratic Party is full of various conciliaries and crooks and thugs. And in some ways, people like Joe and Mika are part of it. And so their job is to fend off any exposés that bring attention and evidence to bear on this kind of crooked Democratic operation. So here we go. When you start talking about conspiracy theories, there you go, conspiracy theories. You know, I know there are a lot of people that are watching that are just shocked. Their heads are blowing up. And then he goes on to say that these conspiracy theories are, quote, whack-a-mole. Quote, you prove one bizarre conspiracy theory about mules. They have another conspiracy theory about a dude from Italy with lasers. See, this is what I call an attempt to link a plausible theory with a lot of evidence supporting it. Technological evidence, which is undeniable. It's funny how the left is now kind of backing off on the geo-tracking stuff. Video evidence is undeniable. I don't even know what they're talking about, the dude from Italy with lasers, but this is an effort to take something legitimate, link it to something absurd, and basically act as if both things are equally absurd. Get rid of that conspiracy theory, they come up with yet another conspiracy theory. Unfortunately for all the conspiracy theories, they go on talk about Chinese cult websites, religious cult websites, and then he repeats the same mantra. This was the cleanest election in American history, which, by the way, we have him saying in the movie. So this poor dumb Joe Scarborough, I don't even think he's seen the movie. And this is what I mean when I say these guys live in their own vacuum. Now, interestingly, they try to deal with this issue of, wait a minute, if they're upset with Trump for not conceding the election, they go, well, what about Stacey Abrams? She never conceded the election. And then they have to do a kind of hemming and hawing and essentially saying, well, yeah, she should have conceded, but, you know, let's remember that she didn't promulgate the kind of lies that Trump did. So, the reason I pay attention to all this is that it's a subject of sort of anthropological interest. It's just, this is the kind of animal that we're dealing with. And in some ways, there's no point arguing with them. They're incapable of engaging in argument. You'd think that they'd be like, okay, well, let's bring Dinesh on and let's see if we can show that his theories are nonsense. They would never dare to do that because they realize that to bring me on would be lethal for them. I would just start going point by point by point and they would look like complete idiots. And of course, their level of sophistication in dealing with these arguments is extremely poor and they kind of know that deep down. So they rely on this kind of recitation. Now, very interestingly, if you want to gauge the impact of these kinds of shows and the fact checkers on people who've actually seen 2000 Mules, let's go to Rotten Tomatoes and ask, what is the impact, not just of Scarborough, but, you know, Philip Bump of the Washington Post, Amanda Carpenter and the Bulwark, she's kind of the never-Trumper, and Ali Swenson from AP, Tom Dreisbach from NPR. This is sort of the left's, like, gang. They're attack dogs, if you will. And by the way, these attack dogs are not really all that formidable, quite frankly. Once you start pushing back, the dogs basically run and they start scowling and wait for another opportunity to attack. And they attack in a pack because it's kind of like each of them doesn't really have much. It's like these little attack dogs that can actually harm a lion because there are so many of them. But each individual dog could never do it because the lion just raises its paw and basically the dog becomes like vaporized. So their strategy is to rely on kind of their fellow snakes. But it has no impact on people who see the film. And look, Rotten Tomatoes. Audience score with over 250 verified ratings. People have actually seen the movie. 100%. Wow. Think of how embarrassed these fools must feel when they see that. 100%. Everybody who sees the movie is blown away by it. And as for these fact checkers, look, I mean, they're masters of the art of deception. I mean, they're really good at it. And it doesn't mean that there's no place for them in a society. I mean, there are certain fields that require professional lying. I mean, you can join the CIA, for example, and maybe put your skills to use, but probably not the best idea for people like this to be in the national media. Some of us wish we could rewind the clock when it comes to our health. Exercising, climbing stairs, all the things young people take for granted. Well, these aren't things that have to stop just because you age. Neither do you have to just endure the normal aging aches and pains. Now there's a 100% drug-free solution. It's called Relief Factor. Relief Factor supports your body's fight against inflammation. That's the source of aches and pains. The vast majority of people who try Relief Factor order more. Why? Because it works for them. Debbie loves using Relief Factor when her shoulder started acting up. About a year or so ago, it was the only thing that worked for her. She knows if she stops taking it, well, the pain's going to come right back. So she's like, I don't want to be without this again. You too can benefit. Try it for yourself. Order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of just $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. Once again, that's 833-690-7246. So go to relieffactor.com. You'll feel the difference. I want to continue something I've been doing the last few days, and that is kind of systematic debunking of so-called fact checks. And here's a new one that's come my way. There's like tons of these. And here, this one is from The Dispatch. Fact-checking Dinesh D'Souza's 2000 Mules. The film's ballot harvesting theory is full of holes. So we're going to look to see where these holes are. So first, they begin by arguing with the statement by Biden. In the beginning of the film, we've put together an extensive and inclusive voter fraud operation. And they go, that's really not what he meant. You know, he's Joe Biden. He says sometimes the opposite of what he means. Okay, I know that. It's a gaffe. But the point is, ever heard of irony? So irony is when someone almost accidentally tells the truth. Obviously, he doesn't mean it, but it's kind of like it's a Freudian slip, as they say. He fesses up that this is a crooked operation, and in a way, it's a perfect metaphor for the movie. So yeah, if you're asking me, did I think that Biden was actually openly admitting that he was a fraudster? No, I wasn't. I'm not that dumb. And so this idea, again, these are people with, in a sense, no subtlety. I don't even know what kind of education they've had, but they have no sense of what words are. They have no sense of metaphor. They think it's a major gotcha. Dinesh has got it wrong. That's not what Biden really meant. This is a so-called fact check. All right. Then we turn to ballot harvesting. Ballot harvesting occurs when third party collects and returns absentee or mail-in ballots on behalf of voters. That's true. Many states allow third parties to deliver ballots. And then they quote David Becker, from the nonpartisan Center for Election Innovation, quote, "That's entirely legal. The vast majority are family members and caregivers." First of all, he doesn't know that. He's just pontificating. Second of all, notice that they're making a generic statement about, quote, many states. And I discussed this, by the way, in the movie. There are about 26 or so states that allow some form of ballot harvesting, although very often with a lot of restrictions. You can only give your ballot to certain designated individuals. There are only a few states that essentially say you can give your ballot to anyone. But this is a meaningless fact check if it's not applied to the five states we're talking about, if it's not applied to Wisconsin. What is the law on ballot harvesting in Wisconsin? They don't say. So what kind of a fact check is it? By the way, ballot harvesting is not allowed in the state of Wisconsin. So they don't say, what they do is they act like some generic statement about ballot harvesting in general can now be used to justify, quote, paid ballot trafficking, which, as I've said before, is legal in no state. Now, here we go. Here's what's important to keep in mind. Even if a vote is illegally harvested in a state where harvesting is illegal, but the vote itself has not been tampered with in any way, i.e. it's signed and sealed, the vote itself would still be considered a legitimate legal vote. And my point is, says who? Says who? Interestingly, this is a so-called fact check, and normally they, of course, like to trot out some source, but they can't find a source here. Why? Because they don't provide one. Why? Because it's not at all clear that a legal vote, illegally delivered, and somehow becomes nevertheless legitimate and should be counted. I mean, obviously there are courts that can look at that and can make determinations on those sorts of things. But by and large, when the process of voting is contaminated, let alone by introducing the issue of money. I mean, even in the most liberal state, if you pay someone to deliver your vote, that's a flat out illegal vote. Even if you are a legitimate voter, even if you filled it out, once bribery and money changes hands, that vote is not legal. So here's a very important issue. And yet the Dispatch, I mean, let's see who the writer is, probably some 30-something, Kaya Himmelman, previously heretofore unknown, nevertheless pontificates, oh, that's okay, it's still a legal vote. And I say BS. Then he turns to the writer. I can't even tell if it's male or female. Gloves. And once again, we have a recitation of the COVID. It's easy to understand why some might regard such behavior as suspicious, but many people wore gloves and masks as health precautions. Again, this is super dumb, because if I had mules throughout the film, from the early voting in October to Election Day, and then in the runoffs, all wearing gloves, then you could say, well, maybe it's COVID. But if there are no gloves in early voting, no gloves on Election Day, and the gloves only show up in mid-December, in the time of the runoffs, and right after an indictment in Arizona. See, they don't even mention any of this. So there's a rival theory. You'd think intellectually honest people would at least say, okay, well, let's match up our theory, COVID, with sort of Dinesh's theory offered in the movie, and let's see which is more plausible. They don't want to do that. So again, they're speaking to their own audience, and they're an audience of ignoramuses, and they're hoping if people go, oh yes, you know, it's COVID. Of course, that's the explanation. Dinesh is so foolish. He didn't even think of that. COVID, guys. So then this is the intellectual quality of what we are up against. And then finally, they talk about geo-tracking. And they, again, regurgitate. If someone goes to a library or a store near a Dropbox twice a day, their cell phone data might make them look like a mule. Stop. First of all, we're talking about people who went to 10 or more Dropboxes. This is not a case. This is why Truth the Vote didn't set the bar to Dropboxes, because some Yahoo is going to come forward and go, wait, you know what? I put my ballot in the first Dropbox. Then I went to the second Dropbox and I had to make a phone call or tie my shoe. And so I stopped in the second Dropbox. So don't count me as a mule. So to avoid this kind of madness, Truth the Vote said, let's set a really high bar, because there's no rational or innocent reason to go to 10 or more Dropboxes. That blows away this particular fact check. So this is this is by and large what I'm confronted with. And talk about whack-a-mole. I'm doing the whack-a-mole. I'm sort of here comes one idiotic rebuttal, boom. And another idiotic rebuttal, COVID, boom. Third idiotic rebuttal, you know, geo-tracking doesn't work, boom. And suffice to say that there's nothing so far that's come up that's really given me pause, like, wow, I wish I had really answered that one in the movie. No, so far we haven't had a single case of that. Well, it's finally happened. The Fed is realizing the dire straits our economy is in thanks to our loose and irresponsible monetary policy. Well, apparently you can't just spend trillions every year with no repercussions. Now, to play catch-up, the Fed has been raising rates and plans to 7 times this year. You're already starting to see the ripple effects in the housing market as people's buying power diminishes. Have you considered what could happen in the stock market if our whole economy stalls out? Well, don't wait till that happens. Take some of your profits from the stock market now and solidify them with gold from Birch Gold. Throughout history, gold has maintained its value better than any other investment in the world. Text Dinesh to 989898 for a free zero-obligation information kit on holding gold in a tax-sheltered retirement account. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You should, too. Countless 5-star reviews and A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. I trust the professionals at Birch Gold. Text Dinesh to 989898 and secure the gains that you've made while you can. A lot of times when people see the movie, they're like, Dinesh, what's going to happen next? Are there any law enforcement authorities that are going to act on the information in the film? And it turns out that there is a new investigation. It's a criminal investigation. It is in Yuma County, Arizona. It's been publicly announced by the sheriff of Yuma. And there are some reports, although I haven't verified them, that that the sheriff has already done some raids on nonprofits, kind of vote stash houses in Yuma. This is being reported by Gateway Pundit, although, like I say, I read through the article. I wasn't positive if this has already happened or if it's going to happen. Now, interestingly, the left, the reporters for in Arizona, have gone running to the sheriff and said, did you start this investigation based on 2,000 mules? And the sheriff goes, no. He goes, quote, these ongoing investigations are based upon facts and evidence regarding violations of Arizona statutes. And then, interestingly, he says that this has been part of an investigation going on for a year. And then he goes, I have not communicated with any individuals who have, because of, quote, supposed inspiration from a documentary film. So the sheriff is basically saying, I didn't see 2,000 mules and, like, jump into action. I've been working on this for a year. Now, a couple things that should be noted. Number one, no one was talking about paid ballot trafficking until 2,000 mules came out. And number two, the mule that we interview, that Greg Phillips interviews in the film, is from San Luis in Yuma County. True the Vote has been investigating in Yuma for months. And so when the sheriff says, I've been on this for a year, I mean, no one's claiming that the film came out. He knew nothing about it. He's like, wow, let me start an investigation. No, this is something that True the Vote has been kind of tracking and mining in Yuma. The sheriff has been doing his investigation. So you can draw your own conclusion about whether the movie plays a role here. But here's my point. Let's say that the sheriff knows nothing about the movie. He's never heard of it. Let's just say that this was a case where, based on his own investigation, he announces an independent criminal probe into ballot trafficking. What does that do? It completely independently corroborates the movie. Why? Because we're not working in concert with the sheriff. We didn't put him up to it. He didn't see the movie even and respond. He has been kind of plowing his own ground, and he's discovered that there's great merit to the idea that this kind of systematic fraudulent ballot trafficking is going on. He knows, of course, that it's illegal in Arizona, and he is now finally on the case. So to me, it's really great that he's looking at impersonation fraud. He's looking at false registrations, duplicate voting, fraudulent use of absentee ballots. I mean, this is all the stuff right out of 2,000 mules. But it's not as if I'm just trying to claim credit for what he's doing. I just want to see some action taken by the legitimate authorities. And evidently in other places, there's resistance. Now, some of these places, of course, are Democratic states. I'm really not surprised that, say, there's no action coming out of Michigan because the Secretary of State is hostile, the Attorney General is hostile, or Pennsylvania, where the situation is pretty much the same. In Wisconsin, there does seem to be some headway, and True the Vote actually is working, I think, less with the statewide authorities and more with individual counties. Let's remember, there's a lot of jurisdiction here on the part of individual sheriffs. And so it doesn't necessarily mean in Arizona, for example, I obviously am hopeful that Mark Brnovich, the attorney general, will move. And I think it's It's to his interest to move. I mean, he's in a difficult primary as it is. And so it may seem crass to bring up political motives here, but the political motives are there. And Brnovich has been sort of resisting coming on board with the idea of illegal ballot trafficking, although he does know quite a bit about it, and he has prosecuted cases of fraud in Arizona. But he needs to up the ante, and this gives him a perfect pretext to do it. And quite frankly, if he did it, he would be a national hero. So I don't understand his own advisors may be blocking him, but they're not the best advisors. If I were him, I'd get rid of the advisors, get rid of the consultants. These are people just basically, consultants basically exist to bilk a campaign. That's their role. And sadly, campaigns are thickly crusted with them. The RNC is thickly crusted with them. These are scam artists. And very often they have sort of corrupted the people in the organization, because there's a kind of symbiotic relationship in which you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back, you send these contracts my way. So all of this is all very unfortunate. There's very weird politics in Georgia. Part of it is because of the contest between David Perdue and Brian Kemp, on which is focused on the issue of election fraud. Kemp, I believe, is decisively leading that race. And I don't know the details. I'm not sure if Perdue has run a bad campaign. I'm really not sure how it is that Kemp has been so unassailable on an issue where clearly, I mean, everyone admits there's been a lot of problems in the Georgia process. And my sense of the Georgia Republican Party is that there's a lot of division and fracturing that's gone on there, which does not bode well, by the way, for November. But back to Yuma, I'm glad there's some action. Gateway Pundit says, quote, like Tweety birds, they sang. But I don't know if that is something that is underway or something that has already happened. All I can say is, let's not worry about who gets the credit. Let's see some arrests.
Imagine the lifelong impact of a journey to the Holy Land. Surrounded by like-minded travelers, picture yourself stepping foot in iconic locations right out of Scripture. Join Dr. Sebastian Gorka and Dinesh D'Souza on this life-enriching Israel tour, November 30th through December 9th, 2022. For more information, call 855-565-5519 or visit standwithisraeltour.com.
Debbie and I think you know, are very interested in the Hispanic vote, in particular in the Rio Grande Valley in the south part of Texas. And honey, you were just talking to your mom.
Yeah, so this morning I was chatting with mom on the way here. I chat with her every morning coming to the studio. And she goes, hey, have you heard about Henry Cuellar's, you know, fight to stay in, you know, in Congress? And of course, you know, today is the election for the
primary.
It's the runoff election.
Oh yeah.
And so apparently he's in a runoff with this woman named Jessica Cisneros, who is touting him as the Joe Manchin of Congress.
So say a word about Cuellar. What is it about Cuellar that made him a target?
Right. Well, Cuellar is one of maybe two Blue Dog Democrats in Texas. He is pro-life, and of course, he is pro-legal immigration, and he is very much against the whole Biden administration fiasco with the border, and he's been very vocal about it. But in this instance, she is running against him because of Roe v. Wade, because she's telling all of her supporters and all the Democrats. And of course, let me quantify that with, she is backed by Ms. The Latina from New York. What's her name?
AOC.
I can't believe I forgot her name. Yeah, I like to forget her name. But anyway, so she's backed by her. So she's very much on the left wing, left. And so her big fight with Henry Cuellar is that he is pro-life and that he's taking away women's rights. Because as you know, the Democrats go with this mantra of it being a healthcare right, not, you know, murdering an unborn child.
So, I mean, their view is that you can't have a pro-life legal immigration advocate in the Democratic Party.
They basically, and you know, to be honest, he's not, you know, even though he says he's a very good Catholic, and he says he's pro-life, he still thinks it's okay to abort up to 20 weeks. So let me quantify that, you know.
So he's more of a moderate. He's not a hardcore pro-lifer.
He's not a hardcore pro-lifer. hardcore pro-lifer, no, or hardcore Catholic, no. But in her eyes, yes, you know, absolutely. He should not be in the Democratic Party because he makes too many waves and because he actually does like to work across the aisle, which, as you know by now, Democrats do not. And but he did vote against Trump twice in the impeachment. So that's, you know, we should say that even though we are like grateful that he has been this much of a, you know, I'm going to get along with the Republicans, he's not completely there either.
And you've talked to him, haven't you? Isn't he the guy you talked to about?
No, that is another pro-life Democrat from the Valley. I've never met Cuellar before.
Oh, okay.
In fact, it'd be kind of fun to have him on the podcast at some point just to see what he really believes and why he's still a Democrat, kind of like with Joe Manchin.
Now, the Valley, I would guess, is pretty... There's a strong pro-life element there. There's probably also a lot of people who've had abortions. And so how, what do you think, how are the politics going to play out? Is this going to be a winning issue for her?
I'm not, it may be a winning issue for Democrats in the primary, but I am not so sure about the general election because, as you know, the Valley has been going red. There's been a red wave happening where they realize that voting for a Democrat is bad in many levels, not just the social, because this is part of just the social, but also the economic. They know that voting for a Democrat really produces like hell on earth.
So, honey, what you're saying is that it could be that Cisneros is actually Cuellar is a stronger candidate in the general.
In the general.
But if he gets knocked out in the primary, in the runoff, and this woman runs, she might lose that
seat. Right, and
which
the
would
Democrats, and the Democrats know it. That's why they're not all kind of on board with endorsing her, because they know that there's a really big chance that they could lose in the general because she's too far left for them and for the Valley, as you
well know. I mean, there's a broader trend here. AOC has been talking about, we got a primary Sinema, we got a primary Manchin, but of course you knock out Sinema in Arizona and you're probably going to lose that seat. And you for sure, if you get rid of Manchin and put another Democrat in place, West Virginia is going to go Republican.
I do think that if this Jessica Cisneros is to beat him in the primary, I don't think she's going to win in the general, so maybe it's actually kind of good.
It might be a good thing. We're now going to ascend with Dante into the circle of Saturn, the circle of temperance. Notice that what Dante does is he takes each of these planets and he identifies them with a single virtue. It could be faith or hope or charity, or it could even be the classical virtues. Now, interestingly, in the normal hierarchy of the classical virtues, wisdom is at the top, and temperance or moderation is at the bottom. Dante inverts this. He has the wise, and that's where we met people like Thomas Aquinas, Albert the Great, and others. But here, as we go higher, and we're now very close to the top, to the end, really, of Paradiso, or Canto 21, we're in the sphere of temperance, which Dante appears to regard as one of the highest of all the virtues. And so it's worth thinking for a moment about what is it about temperance that makes it so great, and who are the type of people we're going to meet in this circle of sphere of Saturn. Now, as it turns out, we're going to meet a monk named Peter Damian. We're going to meet the founder of the monastic order is a guy named Benedict. And we're also going to meet another founder of an order called the Cistercian Order, I believe, Bernard of Clairvaux. So these are all mystics and contemplatives. They spend their life in sort of dedication to contemplating God. And in some ways, these kinds of contemplatives have a bad reputation today because people think, well, they don't really do anything. They just sit on a sacred pillar. They contemplate God. So we want to think about why Dante gives them this kind of high and elevated place in paradise. Now, when we think about temperance, we think of someone who is kind of moderate in their feelings, moderate perhaps in their appetites, And Dante goes along with this definition. In fact, Dante picks up, in a sense, what Thomas Aquinas says about temperance. Temperance is the ability to impose a kind of restraint on human appetites, human desires, desires for money and gain and power and sex and all kinds of things that we want kind of in an unregulated way. And temperance is being able to regulate those things yourself. So not external regulation where someone says, you can't do that. It's that you yourself put a kind of chain on those appetites. And for Dante, the people who do this the most, the kind of exemplars of temperance, are the people who essentially take kind of almost all the human appetites, desire for food, you know, gluttony, desire for, you know, laziness, don't want to do any sloth, desire for power, and basically go, I'm not into that. I'm not going to go there at all. I'm going to shape my life in such a way that it's dedicated wholly to God. So this is the extreme of temperance. You're voluntarily orienting yourself so that your own interests are submerged and God becomes prominent. Now, let's look at the first of these characters, a guy named Peter Damian, who describes a very simple life. There I was known as Peter Damian. And he says, little of mortal life remained to me when I was called and forced to wear the hat. Lean and barefooted Cephas came. Who's Cephas? Cephas actually is Peter. So the Pope, not Peter himself, but the current Pope, who's called here Peter, Cephas came, the mighty vessel of the Holy Spirit, both taking food wherever it was offered. So the Pope is a monk, and he's a beggar. He doesn't own anything. He is taking food wherever it can be given. So what you have is one beggar, the Pope, is coming to a monk who's in a monastery and basically saying, you know, I need you. You need to get out of the monastery and go from the contemplative life to the active life. I'm going to make you a cardinal. But I'm choosing you because you have exactly the same qualities of poverty, of modesty, of not really caring about anything for yourself. You're all about making the church better, reforming the church. And by the way, Peter Damian, very involved with the Pope in what was called the Gregorian reform of the church. And then, of course, very Dante-esque, he goes, your modern pastors need all kinds of help, one here, one there to lead, to prop and hold up their behinds. They are so full of food. So basically, what Dante is doing is contrasting the lean, the sparse, the kind of skinny monk, Peter Damian, and the skinny Pope, who's also a beggar, with the big fat friars and prelates who are so huge that they can barely get up on their horse. They need support. Someone needs to put them up there. Why? Because they're basically all about stuffing themselves with food, with money. So ultimately, Dante is contrasting, you may almost say, the good state of the church in the olden days with the corrupt state of the church in his own day. So notice that even up here in paradise, it's not as if Dante is all about just these are the holy saints sitting in a big circle. No, Dante is political. He's willing to attack the church in his own day. He's emphasizing that church reform is ultimately about not stuffing your own self, but making God's light shine brighter through you.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.